Hello there, I'm Rob, and you're listening to the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 22nd of September 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by sightless charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Louise, Helen, Tanya, Simon, Angela, Liz, Christine, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country, we have the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, information about a new patron for guide dogs, the weather, an update from Sight Loss Councils and their recent Meet the Buses event, sounds of nature, and rounding all that off, we get to hear Graham Fisher's In My Opinion. But first, we have our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. Now we start, as always, with some local news, brought to us by Angela, Ed, Ian, Liz, and first up, we have Christine.
Fed up leaders of seven Midlands councils are taking the Home Office to court over the broken asylum seeker dispersal scheme, saying enough is enough. Wolverhampton Council leader Ian Brookfield announced the authority had joined forces with Birmingham, Coventry, Dudley, Sandwell, Stoke and Walsall, with papers being served in due course. He said the programme, which sees private companies placing people in towns and cities, only featured a third of councils in the UK, while the rest do nothing. The scheme came under fire when it was revealed around 200 asylum seekers had been temporarily placed in the Britannia Hotel in Wolverhampton. At a full council meeting, Councillor Brookfield said, "We've always played our role as a city of sanctuary status. More recently, people will have seen the horrible pictures from Afghanistan. 3 or 4 months ago, when this was first identified, the leaders of the West Midlands pledged we would help 750 people straight away. We recognise the Afghan refugees had worked solidly on our behalf with the British Armed Forces in the most appalling conditions in the most dangerous place on earth. We are happy to help. But what we've got with this dispersal scheme is somebody throwing a huge load of seeds up in the air, seeing where they land and then let them get on with it. Not a scintilla of cooperation with the local authorities. It's all done through a private company, Serco, in the West Midlands. They block book hotels, move people in within 24 to 48 hours with no discussions with local authorities, no finances to help some of the most damaged people we will ever see." A Home Office spokesperson said, "The UK has a proud history of welcoming and supporting those in need of our protection. The government is committed to doing everything necessary to protect the rights of asylum seekers and provide them with the safe, secure accommodation they deserve."
Andy Street has said metro extensions need to happen to improve the speed of commuting in the region. Mr. Street was talking following the West Midlands Combined Authority Board meeting, in which it was agreed a bid of more than £1.7 billion will be made to government. The funding would cover a raft of transport changes in the region, including metro extensions from Wolverhampton to New Cross Hospital, Wensbury to Walsall and Briley Hill and Stourbridge. The authority also wants to extend the metro as far as funding will allow, down Hagley Road towards the Black Country, and is hopeful of getting at least as far as Bearwood. Other papers agreed by the authority include a separate bid for a £540 million package of measures for bus service improvements, and a full business case will be submitted to government for 200 new hydrogen double-deck buses and 240 articulated hydrogen buses over the next 2 years. Mr. Street said he was particularly excited about the metro extensions, cycle lanes and electric vehicle charging points included in the £1.7 billion bid. He said, "We will never get enough for everything we want to do. That can never happen. The list can go on and on and on. But I am very confident we are going to get more money than we have ever had before. And that's really good. So £1 billion is the minimum target we are after, and hopefully it will be considerably more."
People have been urged to come forward for the COVID vaccine after it emerged parts of the region have some of the lowest second dose take-up rates in the country. According to new NHS figures, the four Black Country boroughs all have take-up rates for the second dose of the vaccine that are below the national average of 80%. In Sandwell and Wolverhampton, more than a third of people aged 16 and over have not yet received a second dose, while in Birmingham, just 57% of people are double-jabbed, prompting concerns from health officials and MPs. The issue was raised in the Commons by Shadow Health Secretary Jonathan Ashworth, who called on ministers to do more to boost vaccines in parts of the country with relatively low uptake, including Wolverhampton. In Wolverhampton, 73% of people aged 16 and over have had their first dose, with the rate for second doses at 65.6%. Sandwell's rates for first and second doses are 73.2% and 65.2% respectively. In Walsall, 79.4% of people have had their first dose, with 72% having both doses, and in Dudley, 77% of people are double jabbed. Sally Roberts, Chief Nursing Officer for Black Country and West Birmingham CCG and local vaccination programme lead, said, "In all areas across the Black Country and West Birmingham, we are seeing people come forward to get their second dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. While the first dose provides a good level of protection from the harmful effects of the virus, the second dose is crucial to giving you the maximum benefit. So we're strongly urging people to come forward at 8 weeks and receive it."
A public meeting is being held on the Black Country Plan, and members of the Dudley South constituency Labour Party are urging residents to attend to ensure their voices are heard. Vast swathes of Greenbelt land are currently under threat as part of the proposals that have been put forward by the Conservative-run Dudley Council. The plans would see 3,154 new houses built in Briley Hill, with developments taking place up until 2039, and a further 2,662 houses would be built in the town of Dudley and its surrounding areas, with 860 in King's Winford. Overall, a total of 13,235 houses have been earmarked for the Black Country area, while 22 hectares of land would be made available under the current plans. The Labour group is particularly concerned about the amount of green belt land that has been earmarked for development and is opposing the plans in their current form. Jan Norton, chairwoman of the Dudley South CLP, said the Labour group would like to praise the outstanding work of all the community groups in challenging these proposals. "It's important to keep the responses simple and for answers to be written clearly. Members of the public are also urged to say what the area has meant and means to them and how the proposals might impact on them through the loss of green belts, the impacts of their quality of life, how the plans could affect traffic and transport, the extra pressures on local facilities, the destruction of local environment, the importance of keeping green fuel spaces locally and any accompanying legislation. Walheath as one will be hosting the meeting, which is open to the public at the Walheath Community Centre on Saturday, September the 25th from 10 a.m. till noon. The plan can be viewed at blackcountryplan.dudley.gov.uk/T2/P5, while response forms are also available in local libraries. Copies of the Black Country Plan can be requested by calling 01384 814136.
Thousands of complaints were recorded across the West Midlands as noisy neighbours caused a headache during the coronavirus pandemic. New figures reveal how the confinement to homes during lockdown brought householders into conflict. Complaints registered in our region were up by more than a quarter on normal times. Many came from loud music being played, especially in the summer lockdown when windows and doors were likely to be open. Almost 15,000 complaints were made in parts of the Black Country and Staffordshire during the first year of the pandemic. But the figure is far higher, as not all authorities provided figures. The data was revealed in a Freedom of Information request made to authorities across the country, which found more than 368,000 complaints were filed. Figures show a total of 3,240 noise complaints were made in Dudley alone over the period, up substantially on the year before. Councillor Laura Taylor-Child, Cabinet Member Responsible Community Safety, said we take all complaints about noise very seriously and remind people of their responsibilities. In extreme cases, we will not hesitate to prosecute people through the courts if they do not take advice and continue to breach acceptable levels of noise.
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from Beacon, and it's that time of the week again. So I'm back with another roundup of what's been going on and what's on our social media pages. First up, we wanted to introduce you to another member of our fantastic team here at Beacon. So on social media this week, we told people about Ruby, who runs our canic store that opened over summer. If you haven't visited yet, it is well worth stopping by. She says what she most enjoys about her role is meeting customers, but also knowing the difference she makes for people with sight loss. You can find our canic store at 19 Market Place Canic, WS11 1BS, and you can also find out more about all of our shops around the region on our website. Just visit www.beaconvision.org/shops. Next, we're so excited that the JW Hunt Cup has been able to restart this month after the pandemic. The Cup is a charity football competition created in 1926 to help raise funds solely for Beacon. And as one of our longest and most treasured supporters, they've helped raise over £369,000. Wow. To mark the kickoff of a new season, we wanted to share some of the stories of those involved and what the Cup means to them. And people like Brian, the referee's appointments officer, who first got involved as a referee over 20 years ago. He told us that while he was always happy to do his bit for a good cause, it wasn't until a chance encounter on holiday back in 2005 that he came to truly understand the impact of sight loss. He said, "We'd met another couple on holiday with their grandchildren. It turned out that the wife was losing her sight and would be totally blind within a few months. They'd arranged a trip so that they could see them and make some memories while she still had some sight. It really stuck with me and made me think what it must be like not to see your children or your grandchildren grow up." When he came back, he pledged to show his support through the Cup, which he describes as a labour of love. And he's done a fantastic job over the years. Thank you for all your support, Brian. Next, we're saying a big well done to our amazing reception team, who've recently dealt with a record-breaking 762 calls in 3 months. The team are the first port of call for anyone contacting Beacon, whether it's someone looking for sight loss support or directions to our shops. They always go the extra mile to provide excellent customer service. If you want to see how you can help, give us a call. You should know the number by now, but it's 01902 880111. We've also got another sight loss tip of a week this week, and it's this: take a small step every day. Pretty good advice, eh? But if we're talking about stairs, it's not always that easy if you're living with sight loss. To help, why not place a tactile marking near to the top and the bottom of the handrails on your stairs so that you know where the staircase starts and finishes? For more sight loss advice, why not contact our sight loss advisors? You can ring them on, and you really should know the number by now, 01902 880 111. That's it for this week. I'll be back soon with another Beacon update.
Thank you for the update, Helen. Up now, we go over to some more local news. And starting us off, we have Angela.
A father and son have been ordered to pay almost £2,000 after they built up a rat-ridden waste mountain outside their home in the Black Country. Mattresses, wood, building materials and a disused caravan were piled up on the driveway and in the back garden of a property on Star Street, Lye. The semi-detached bungalow was being rented by Paul Shillingford, with the mountain of waste leading to complaints being made to Dudley Council. The 49-year-old and his son Aaron Shillingford, aged 30, and also of Star Street, appeared at Dudley Magistrates Court last week after a district judge ruled that they had failed to clean up the mess within an agreed timescale by the court. And following the prosecution by Dudley Council's enforcement team, the men were fined £40 each and were both ordered to pay £400 in costs and also a £32 victim surcharge each. They have been given 28 days to pay the total sum of £1,764 or face further action, which could include imprisonment. The waste has now been cleared from the site, where Aaron Shillingford also has a waste collection business registered, the court was told. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "I wholeheartedly welcome the decision of the court and the district judge in this case. I have seen the pictures taken by officers and I can only imagine what it must have been like to live so close to such an unsightly mess. These two men created a rat-ridden waste mountain outside their home, which must have made life hell for everyone living around them. They were given every opportunity to tidy it up and failed to comply with extended deadlines. These two men now have a large amount of money to find in a short space of time to avoid further punishment."
More than 1,300 deadly weapons taken off the streets of the West Midlands through surrender bins are set to be destroyed. The haul, including knives, guns and machetes, have been dropped in 20 of the containers, known better as knife bins. The 1,321 weapons have been dropped into the secure containers which are located across the region to curb rising crime. Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Foster said, "Every weapon that is deposited into those bins is potentially saving a life. With this number of weapons collected in such a short period of time, clearly these bins are working by taking dangerous items off our streets. I'm committed to investing in more preventative programs to stop violence happening in the first place. The West Midlands Violence Reduction Unit is working at pace to deliver a range of interventions that will help us intervene to prevent violent crime. We also have our expanded police gangs unit working to disrupt and take on those who are responsible for violence. The massive haul has been collected over the past 6 months, and the PCC is hoping to expand the program further with the aim of reducing violence and getting more weapons off the streets."
A Wolverhampton NHS trust has launched a campaign to raise awareness of sepsis, which can be fatal if not recognised early. Staff at the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust had a Wear Red Day, ran a board competition and put together a balloon arch and materials to raise awareness. Sony Thattle, lead sepsis nurse at the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, said, "It is very important that we raise awareness of sepsis, as it is a really dangerous infection, and if we spot the signs early, we can treat it effectively. We have made significant improvements across the trust over the last few years, including appointing a dedicated sepsis team, utilising technology, to identify and manage patients who may be at risk of developing sepsis, updating clinical pathways, building an e-learning sepsis module to increase education and awareness across the Trust, and collaborative work with the critical care outreach team to improve early recognition of the deteriorating patient. Sepsis is a poisoning of the blood, arising when the body's response to an infection injures its own tissues and organs, including infection from COVID-19. It can lead to shock, multiple organ failure and death, especially if not recognised early and treated promptly. Symptoms in adults include slurred speech, extreme shivering, passing no urine, severe breathlessness and mottled skin. Staff urged people to call 999 or go to A&E if they or someone they know has the above symptoms.
A controversial plan for a 5G mast prompted more than 130 Halesowe in residents to fight against it, saying it has been a nightmare for all of us. But Telecoms Company 3 will erect a 15-metre high pole outside the Fairfield pub on Fairfield Road after a proposal was approved by Dudley Council's Development Control Committee. When the plans emerged, residents were furious about the impact the equipment could have on their health and the value of their homes. They also complained about work starting in April and continuing without necessary planning permission, which almost saw the mast being erected in May. At Monday's meeting, planning officers said enforcement teams acted on residents' information to halt the work, which was being carried out in the wrong place. Resident Darren Bastable told the committee, "Work began on this mast on April the 6th. It was being installed where planning permission hadn't been given. Work never stopped. They carried on and carried on and totally ignored everyone and did it without any planning permission. On May the 24th, the mast arrived. Luckily, I got through to Dudley Council Planning and the work ceased." Helen York, Dudley Council Planning Officer, said, "Three had provided the necessary information to assure them the mast would not have a negative impact on people's health." She added there were no issues around noise or adverse impact on highway safety. She added, "Masts of this scale and nature are becoming commonplace in terms of street furniture in the borough and wider West Midlands as the rollout of 5G technology progresses. While the proposed mast will undoubtedly change the outlook for some residential properties, the harm is not considered to outweigh the benefits of this technology."
Cabinet Minister Michael Gove has been promised a tour of Wolverhampton nightclubs when he comes to the city. The quip was a reference to video footage emerging last month of Mr. Gove dancing with revellers in an Aberdeen nightclub. Councillor Ellis Turrell lightened the mood of a council meeting when he joked about taking the newly appointed Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government to sample Wolverhampton's nightlife. And he looks set to spend more time in Wolverhampton after the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government moved into the city centre's I-9 building. It will take up two floors of the development, part of the £150 million interchange, making it the first government department to have a HQ outside London. At the full council meeting on Wednesday, during a discussion about the Brewer's Yard development in Wolverhampton, Councillor Turrell referenced funding provided by Whitehall, which he said had enabled many major schemes put forward by the Labour administration. He said, "The I-9 building would be half empty if it wasn't for the MHLG choosing to relocate their offices here. And may I just say what a fantastic new Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government we have in Michael Gove. He won't put up with any nonsense from this Labour Council, let me assure you. And we will be sure to take him around the local nightclubs. Planet Pop World, he'll love it here."
Now we hand over to Mina, who this week has a quiz that has a rather autumnal feel to it.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. What substance in leaves presents people seeing autumn colours all year round? Question 2. What was autumn called before about 1500? Question 3. What date is considered to be the official start of autumn? Question 4. Who, according to the Greek mythology, abducted Persephone? Question 5. On which tree do we see conkers? And finally, question 6. What festival is held by many churches each autumn? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Thank you for those quiz questions, Mina. I'll think on those. Up next, we're another block of local news. And starting us off, we hear from Ed.
Police dispersal orders have been introduced in Dudley after residents said they felt intimidated by groups of youths. Officers have also been carrying out stop and searches following reports of crime and antisocial behaviour, which have led to the confiscation of weapons. West Midlands Police said residents have complained about youths aged between 10 and 18 gathering in large numbers in the town centre and nearby streets. The force said some residents were left feeling intimidated, that there had been a rise in public order offences and reports of criminal damage in the town. Such orders give officers temporary additional powers to instruct someone to leave the area whose behaviour is likely to cause alarm, harassment or distress. The areas include Castle Hill, Trindle Road, the Broadway, James Road, High Street and King Street, Tipton Road, Birmingham Road and Birtree Island and Castlegate Drive.
A landlord of a pub near Wolverhampton says the business is still not back to pre-coronavirus levels of trade despite restrictions ending. Neil Taylor, landlord of the Fox at Shipley, said it had been difficult as the business navigated through the uncertainty caused by COVID-19. He spoke on Hospitality Action Day, set up by the industry to highlight the challenges it faces and to encourage people to get out and use their pubs, cafes and restaurants. The Fox closed its doors on March 20th, 3 days before the first national lockdown was imposed, alongside other businesses across the country. Mr. Taylor was later admitted to New Cross Hospital in Wolverhampton after catching the virus and said he was at death's door as he fought for his life. Now, after recovering from COVID-19, the landlord has said he wished there had been more support for the business from local authorities. And although some pubs and restaurants were open for takeaway, the location of the Fox being in the middle of the countryside made things difficult. Overall, the Bridge North Road-based business furloughed 22 staff and has since gone above and beyond to make sure people feel safe with a string of measures put in place. There was nothing we could have done any different, the landlord said, as he explained the business had not fully recovered from the virus but was getting there. And Mr. Taylor said Hospitality Action Day was a way for the industry to remind people of its importance. It has been organised by the charity Hospitality Action, which offers financial help as well as advice and welfare to business owners and their staff.
All electric garages will create up to 15 jobs after opening its second Hyundai dealership in the West Midlands. The new base on Enville Street in Stourbridge joins All Electric's Kidderminster site in providing showrooms, workshops and car preparation areas for new and used Hyundai cars to the whole region. The Stourbridge dealership opened in the last week of July with 6 new hires, and it is hoped this could grow to as many as 15 staff as the business continues to expand over the next 2 years. Jason Pickerill, Managing Director of All Electric Garages, explained they had been involved with Hyundai since 1996, developing an expertise that gave them a clear advantage over online competitors. He said, "We're really impressed with Hyundai technology for both electric and hybrid vehicles and felt this was the right time to invest. Despite the pandemic, we've done extremely well from our Kidderminster base and wanted to serve a bigger area like Stourbridge, which has a lot more chimney pots." The new Hyundai car showroom is around 2,000 square feet, based on a site of just over an acre, with enough room for 50 used cars, another 5 in a new vehicle showroom, plus plus a 5-bay workshop.
Police descended on one of the busiest junctions in the Black Country as part of a drive for safer roads. Officers from the Road Harm Prevention Team spent the day at Parkfield Road in Wolverhampton as part of Operation Safer Junction. The operation is part of the National Police Chiefs Council's Vulnerable Road Users Week of Action and has seen the team go to well-known hotspots across the region to stop and deal with vehicles who put other road users at risk. Sergeant John Butler from West Midlands Police was leading the operation on Parkfield Road, which runs between Blakenhall and Ettingshall in Wolverhampton, and spoke about the work of the operation. He said, "We are going around the West Midlands and conducting activities to promote safer road use for our vulnerable road users, which are pedestrians, cyclists, motorcyclists and horse riders, and trying to encourage shared space on the road. That means being in a position where you can go and use the road network without fearing that you're going to come into confrontation with other road users." Sergeant Butler said Parkfield Road had been picked as a location because collision data highlighted it as one of those where there was a high level of accidents, as well as red light jumpers. It has also been identified as being particularly difficult for pedestrians to cross. He said the operation had seen officers check for violations of red light compliance, as well as checking the side roads along Parkfield Road for potential offences, and the officers on foot were talking to pedestrians.
A Shropshire contractor has been chosen to undertake the revamp of Dudley Town Hall, with work starting next month, council chiefs have said. Dudley Council said J.R. Slee, based in Shrewsbury, won the tender for the revamp, which is set to include a new bar and bistro. A provisional start date of October the 11th has been set for the revamp, and it is hoped that the project will be completed by the spring of next year. The bar and bistro will be accessed off Priory Street using the Memorial Tower entrance, with plans to also create an outside seating area for continental-style drinking and dining during the warmer months. It is hoped the new facility will generate additional income for the council by providing an additional outlet selling drinks and refreshments for people attending shows at the St James's Road venue. The plans also reveal that council bosses plan to open the new bar and bistro every day to the public, and not just when shows are on the venue. Councillor Simon Phipps, Cabinet Member responsible for Borough Hall, said, "This is an exciting development for the Town Hall and for Dudley Town Centre as a whole, so I'm delighted to hear that work is soon to be starting on making it a reality."
Now we have an update from the Sight Loss Councils regarding their recent Meet the Buses event in Wolverhampton.
On the 27th of August 2021, Black Country Sight Loss Council held its first ever Meet the Buses event. We caught up with Black Country Sight Loss Council Engagement Manager Louise Knopp to tell us more.
Okay, Louise, could you just introduce yourself, tell me what you do for SLC?
I'm Louise Knopp, the Engagement Manager for the West Midlands.
Okay, tell me what this event has been all about.
So it's a Meet the Buses event in Wolverhampton that the Black Country Sight Loss Council organised to give blind and partially sighted people locally the opportunity to walk around the different bus layouts, to ask questions, to talk to drivers and training managers about the experiences that they've had and how, by making small changes, they can help to make it a more pleasant journey going forward.
And why are events like this needed?
Unfortunately, the consensus locally is that the same kind of issues keep cropping up about audio descriptions on the buses and the drivers not waiting for people to take a seat before they drive off or telling them where their stops are. So it's important to be able to speak firsthand with the people that are on the ground, but also to the people who organise the training that the drivers have, to show how by making small changes it can have a big difference.
What have drivers been saying to you when they've been wearing the sim specs?
It's been really good actually, that a lot of the drivers have said that it's instantly had a huge impact. They know their buses, they know the layouts, and even they found it difficult to find where to put the bus pass or how to get a seat. So one driver in particular said that every single one of the drivers should experience what he's experienced today to ensure that they can provide a better service moving forward, because they understand more of why it's needed.
And as a Sightloss Council, what do you think we'll be doing to move this forward from today?
To continue to work closely and collaboratively with National Express, who are the bus provider in the region, but also to keep in contact with the operations side of it, with the deputy manager, the depot managers, because they're just as keen as we are to ensure that their service is up to the high standards that they set themselves. So it's about moving on from this event and not forgetting what they've experienced to make positive change going forward.
To find out more about Sightloss Councils, visit our website at www.sightlosscouncils.org.uk.
We now have our final block of local news, brought to us by Angela, Ed, Liz, and starting us off, we go over to Christine.
Police officers faced a slippery situation when a shocked couple found a python in their bedroom. The residents reported the large snake slithering around their bedroom in Quarry Bank, Dudley, and had no idea where it had come from. They told West Midlands Police they had a big item delivered the day before, but were not sure if the snake had been hiding in the box or if it had slithered in through a pipe. While the RSPCA would usually handle this type of call, the report was made just after 10 p.m. last Wednesday, and nobody from the rescue charity was available. This did not deter officers from the police's Brierley Hill Professional Development Unit, who stepped in to help save the day. Student officers PCs Bethan Pinnock, Lucy Calls and Rhiann Hazel visited the address and were directed to a front bedroom, the door of which the couple had managed to close to keep the snake inside. The officers used batons to carefully lift the yellow snake, which was around 5 foot long, and placed it in a shoebox with holes in. The officers contacted Manor Vets Hales Owen, who kindly agreed to take the snake in overnight until the RSPCA were able to attend. A vet informed the officers that it was a female python of a mature age. The snake had a few lumps and old injuries, but was very friendly and was generally otherwise in good health, said the police spokesperson. We'd like to say a big thanks to the Manor Vets team for helping us and to our student officers for dealing with this slippery situation so calmly without any hysterics.
A summer activity scheme enjoyed by thousands of youngsters across Wolverhampton has been hailed as a great success and is set to be replicated in half term. The Yo Summer Festival, organised by Wolverhampton Council, saw children and young people take part in a wide range of fun days, sporting activities and holiday clubs in the holidays. There were more than 500 different activities, ranging from the unique walking, running and rolling game Beat the Street, which saw nearly 10,000 residents travel a combined 60,000 miles in total, through to meeting dinosaurs from Jurassic Earth as part of the Relight Festival in West Park. More than 1,500 children and young people with special educational needs and disabilities also enjoyed a variety of events organised by Parent Carer Forum, Voice for Parents, from 10-pin bowling to fishing and horse riding. Among those organisations hosting was the YMCA Black Country Group. Luke Tyler, Head of Health and Wellbeing Services, said, "Our YMCA summer activities went really well, with regular high attendance throughout, from our keeping fit sessions to learning to cook. We received many compliments from families and young people who attended. The council said creating opportunities for young people is a major priority, and following on from the huge success of this year's summer festival, it is currently working on plans for the October half term, where many more activities and events will take place across the city. Final details will be available at yowolves.co.uk.
The children's play area at Buffery Park is set to benefit from a £44,000 revamp. New swings, a zip wire and a roundabout will be added to the park, while some of the existing play equipment and fencing will be retained and refurbished. £30,000 has come from the environmental charity, the Enovert Trust. £7,000 from the Friends of Buffery Park and just over £7,000 from Dudley Council, with the total cost coming to £44,312.93. The park revamp comes as the Friends Group celebrates its 20th anniversary. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "The equipment at Buffery Park is in urgent need of upgrading, and I welcome this investment. The Active Friends Group at the park has actively been pushing for improvements to this play area, particularly so there are things to do for older children. They have contributed a good sum of their own money towards it, and as a listening council, we are happy to push this forward and make up the difference so it can go ahead. Our parks and play areas are a great free way of helping children stay active, and these improvements will be beneficial to the whole community in and around Buffery Park."
A new project to create a wildflower meadow as part of the city's carbon reduction plans has been launched. The initiative, a collaboration between volunteers and Wolverhampton Council, saw wildflower seeds spread across an 800 square metre area of Wensfield Park. The aim is to help to raise awareness of habitat loss for species due to climate change, and local organisation Our City's Wild Islands, which came up with the idea, has planned the groundworks, maintenance, signage and involved the public in its plans, with the backing from Mayor of Wolverhampton Greg Brackenridge and his ward funds. The first area to be rewilded is adjacent to the skate park and will be the largest wildflower meadow in Wolverhampton. A path running through the meadow will give access to people when it blooms next year. Ryan Eddowes, BSc Honours Founder Project Director, said, "Wilder areas will help increase insect populations, meaning more pollinators like bees and butterflies, which are essential for pollinating food crops. Since the Second World War, the United Kingdom has lost 97% of its wildflower meadows, with a reduction in plant and insect biodiversity. Our City's Wild Islands aims to help protect the natural world by rewilding areas such as roundabouts, roadside verges and parks, allowing nature to thrive within our cities."
Two firework displays will light up Wolverhampton's skyline in November after being cancelled last year by the pandemic. The event will take place on November the 6th at Wolverhampton Racecourse on Gorsebrook Road alongside a fun fair and food stalls. However, there will be no bonfire this year, so there's more space to accommodate people safely as COVID-19 infection levels are still high. Wolverhampton Councillor Steve Evans, Cabinet Member with responsibility for events, said, "The people of Wolverhampton can look forward to two world-class firework displays on November the 6th. Working with one of the UK's leading and award-winning firework companies, these will be something really special. It promises to be a fantastic night out. We will be so pleased to welcome people back to this annual event, which sadly had to be postponed last year due to the pandemic. Wolverhampton is an event city. We are bringing back live entertainment for people to enjoy, and discounted advance tickets are on sale now. As ever, I would urge people to attend a professionally arranged firework display like this one at the racecourse, rather than attempting to light fireworks at home, which can be dangerous and cause injuries."
Now we head over to our very own Flashback Roger, who as always has for us a bunch of amazing facts.
Hello again everyone. Well, where has this year gone? September's nearly done and autumn is here. I must say that I love this time of year with its colours and misty mornings, so let's have a look at what I've uncovered about this lovely season. Now then, did you know that? All the wonderful colours that autumn brings to the leaves are actually all there throughout the year. However, we can't see them until the green chlorophyll in the tree starts to disappear with the colder season, readying the tree for winter. Until about the year 1500, autumn was just called harvest. The full moon closest to the autumn equinox is known as a harvest moon. Before cities electrified, the bright night of the harvest moon was essential for farmers harvesting their late year crop. And there are two different dates when autumn could be said to begin. Autumn, as defined by the Earth's orbit around the Sun, begins on the equinox, which falls on the 22nd or 23rd of September. However, to record climate data, it's important to have set dates that can be compared. So meteorological autumn always begins on the 1st of September. And the word equinox is Latin and simply means equal night, as the day is 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of darkness on the 22nd and 23rd of September. And there's a lovely story in Greek mythology. It says that autumn began when Persephone was abducted by Hades to be queen of the underworld. In distress, Persephone's mother, Demeter, the goddess of the harvest, caused all the crops on earth to die until her daughter was allowed to return, marking spring. And of course, a favourite childhood pastime in autumn is a good old game of conkers, although the earliest reference tells of the game played using snail shells or hazelnuts. Horse chestnut conkers became popular in the 19th century, with the game being played all over the country, and it even has a national competition. Incidentally, conkers don't grow on pink horse chestnut flowers, as they were developed to be ornamental. Autumn is always a time for giving thanks for the safe gathering in of crops, and gives the name of harvest home to church festivals, and of course when we see competitions of rival allotmenteers and gardeners for the prizes awarded to the growers of the largest, or longest, or heaviest vegetable. Champion growers guard the secrets of their success closely, as rivals often resort to espionage to discover what weird and wonderful methods others employ to succeed. Well, there you go then. I hope that you have enjoyed these few items about, as Keats put it in his poem, this season of mist and mellow fruitfulness. So I'll start to scribble away me jams and pickles, start me Christmas list, and check me winter vests for holes. So wish me luck with me darning skills, 'cause I'm off now. So till next week, I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Thank you for those fantastic facts, Roger. Up next, we now have Mina, who has for us a weather update.
The weather for this week ahead looks to be mixed, with both spells of sunshine and rain expected. Temperatures will be falling throughout the week, starting at around 20 degrees and falling to 15. UV levels are expected to be low throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:04 a.m. for the sunrise and 6:54 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 24th and Saturday 25th of September, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. On Sunday 26th of September, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. Moving on to Monday 27th of September, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 17 degrees. On Tuesday 28th of September, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 16 degrees. For Wednesday 29th of September, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. And finally, on Thursday 30th of September, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Now we have our sportsman, Ian, giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. It's now three draws on the spin for Albion after they played out a 1-1 stalemate with Preston North End at Deepdale. The Baggies travel to Lancashire looking to get back to winning ways following underwhelming performances against both Derby and Millwall. But after a positive second half showing against the Rams, Baggies supporters travelled up the M6 confident their side could get back to winning ways.
In the end, though, they saw another disappointing performance from their side, with Valerian Ismail's side lacking creativity throughout. North End opened the scoring midway through the first half when Ben Whiteman saw a strike from 20 yards deflect past Sam Johnston. Matt Phillips then pulled the baggies level just seconds before the interval when he turned the ball in at the back post following a Darnell Furlong long throw. In the second half, both teams created very little. Ryan Ledston saw a smart volley saved for the hosts, while right at the end, Albion's Jordan Hugill was played in on goal only to hit a tame effort straight at goalkeeper Daniel Iverson. It meant the Baggies had to make do with a single point once again, with the result seeing them drop to third in the championship. Wolves were made to pay for an extremely poor first half display as they fell to a 2-0 defeat at home to newly promoted Brentford. The high press from the visitors caused Wolves problems from the off and forced them into mistakes and relinquishing possession. Ivan Toney had two goals disallowed either side of his opener, which came from the penalty spot, before he then set up strike partner Brian Mbumo for a tap-in. Wolves made attacking changes for the second half and saw most of the ball, but failed to make any of their half chances count as they looked off the pace compared to their previous performances. In the end, they were condemned to a 2-0 loss in front of an angry and frustrated Molineux. Bruno Lage believes Wolves' mistakes were their own downfall in the loss to Brentford, but has criticised Premier League referees for very disappointing decisions. He said, "We gave one goal to them in 25 minutes. Situations happen in both boxes, and in our box it was a penalty. No argument with that. But if you have the image from when one defender grabbed Trincao and nothing happened. Against Tottenham, they had one penalty, and then the same situation in their box against Raul and nothing happened. Man United, everyone saw what they did to Rubin. Today, another penalty, and then in their box, nothing happened. The last 45 minutes, I need to understand how many minutes we played, because I saw too many players on the floor from the opponent. Even the goalkeeper changed his gloves. For now, we stick to complaining about what we did and the way we offered the goals to the opponent. They are a strong team and knew what to do in the last 45 minutes to manage the game. One, two or three situations is okay, but it happens too much sometimes, and two players at the same time, but this is football. We move forward to the next game, that's the most important thing."
Up next is our Sounds of Nature feature, which this week is an uninterrupted recording of an estuary atmosphere made at Axmouth in Devon. This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Now we hear from Tanya, who tells us all about the new patron of Guide Dogs.
Hello, Tanya here to tell you that the charity Guide Dogs has a new royal patron, with Sophie, Countess of Wessex, taking over the role from Princess Alexandra. Princess Alexandra, a first cousin of the Queen, has stepped down as patron of the charity at the age of 84. She has served as Guide Dogs patron for more than 60 years, since first taking up the role in 1957. At a special double royal event, the princess handed over the patronage to the Countess of Wessex. The Countess is married to the Queen's youngest son, Prince Edward. As well as marking the change in patron, the event also gave the Royal Seal of Approval for the official opening of Guide Dogs' new regional centre for the South West in Bristol. The Royal Pair saw demonstrations of puppy and dog training classes and heard how guide dogs can help both children and adults who are visually impaired. Guide Dogs is celebrating its 90th anniversary in 2021, and so far the charity has trained over 35,000 dogs. In addition to providing guide dogs, the charity also helps visually impaired people through services such as mobility training. As incoming patron, the Countess of Wessex brings a long-standing interest in charities that help the visually impaired. She is also patron of the Vision Foundation and global ambassador for the International Agency for the Prevention of Blindness. In addition, she was patron of the Diamond Jubilee Trust, which is now winding down but sought to eliminate trachoma as a form of preventable blindness. Jamie Hambro, chairman of Guide Dogs, said, "We are incredibly honoured to mark and to thank in person Princess Alexandra for her wonderful contribution over the last 67 years, first as our president, then since 1957 as our patron. And we're looking forward to working with our new patron to continue to highlight our work which enables people living with sight loss to live the lives they choose."
Thanks for that, Tanya. Now, how did you get on at the quiz? Well, now's the time to find out, as we hand over to Mina, who asked for us the answers.
Hello, and yes, here are your answers for this week's autumn theme flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. What substance in leaves prevents people seeing autumn colours all year round? And the answer is chlorophyll. Question 2. What was autumn called before about 1500? And the answer here is harvest. Question 3. What date is considered to be the official start of autumn? And of course, it's 1st of September. Question 4. Who, according to Greek mythology, abducted Persephone? And the answer here is Hades. Question 5. On which tree do we see conkers? And of course, it's the horse chestnut tree. And finally, question 6. What festival is held by many churches in autumn? And the answer here is the Harvest Festival. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of an inkjet printer. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we now head over to Graham Fisher for another edition of In My Opinion.
Hello. Some years ago, in my days with what was then 102.5 The Bridge, before its reincarnation as Black Country Radio, I ran an afternoon chat show in which a wide range of the great and the good extended me the courtesy of sitting opposite in the hot seat. From holy men to engineers, charity founders to entertainers, we welcomed the lot. One such was a local comedian. Am I even allowed to employ that gender-specific term these days? Ah, how times change. But its use does narrow it down a bit as to whom I refer. Anyway, a local comedian who caused such uproarious merriment that saw me actually slide off my seat under the table in uncontrollable laughter, whilst in the next studio, and ostensibly being introduced to the finer points of broadcasting, a gaggle of visitors looking through the window were themselves doubled up with laughter, looking at me, doubled up with laughter. And the topic? my guest's ranting, excoriating diatribe on the difference between us Black Country yam-yams and our neighbours across the cultural divide beyond Here Be Dragons in Birmingham. Real knockabout stuff, and very, very funny in its mock deprecation of both. Though our sense of rivalry is of its own time and area, we are not alone, and there are numerous other examples of such parochial and largely, though not always, similarly benign antagonisms across the land. In my student days at Sunderland many years ago, for example, I quickly learnt the difference between Wearsiders and their neighbouring Geordies, both of whom, to the outsider, apparently spoke the same language. Note to self and my Brummy mates. They think we talk the same. Doyo just ate that. Thus do yam-yams and Brummies coexist by continuing to hone their mutually disparaging but ultimately non-malevolent repertoire. But imagine for a moment the nomenclatures are changed to, let's say, Tutsi and Hutu. The Rwandan genocide was a mass slaughter of Tutsi and moderate Hutu during the Rwandan Civil War of 1994. Up to 1 million Rwandans were killed, about 70% of the Tutsi's population, and only ended with a military victory of the Rwandan Patriotic Front. Closer to home, but further back in history, the UK was the unwitting beneficiary of the dreadful religious persecution that led to an influx of Huguenots, who brought with them their skills including weaving, lace-making, and, particularly germane to the Stourbridge area, glass-making. We could similarly examine the opposing factions in the Irish Troubles, much of the Middle East, and many other parts of the globe. Now, throw into this mix the potential for strife induced by differences in skin colour, lifestyle choice, sexual orientation, or any other number of mutually incompatible factors that are politically de rigueur at the time, and we have a potent mix for the stirring of malcontent. All of these have two features in common. First, the problems, as loosely described here, are universally recognised. I guarantee I could count on the fingers of one hand the number of listeners who have not heard of, or maybe have even experienced for themselves, at least one. Second, at any given stage, and depending upon their prominence within a given political cycle, huge amounts of effort, perhaps by way of social intervention, education, or straightforward cash injections, are directed their way. Particularly, it seems, at election time. Or is that just the cynic in me baring its fangs? Yet there is one problem that still goes largely unreported, even unnoticed, certainly to the extent that little is actively done to address it. With a recognition factor that is inversely proportional to its capacity for destruction, it is a problem that has the potential to devastate society, yet in a quietly malignant way that may find us wanting when it is too late to address by the standard fallback methods we currently throw as we would lob a life belt. I'll name the problem in one word in just a moment. But before I do, let me set the scene with the entirely true tale of a pub I frequented with my dear late father when we lived in Wollaston near Stourbridge back in the 1980s. It's an Indian restaurant now, which is sad. But not because it's an Indian restaurant, and a rather good one at that, but because of what was lost in the transition. You see, every Friday night, my father and I would go there about 7 p.m. to be greeted by an already packed house that typically included a range of characters I'll attempt to describe. At the bar were a group of friends who, having worked hard all week, intended to play hard for the weekend, commencing with a few beers in their local, whilst attired in fancy dress of the day. One week they'd be American cowboys, the next a gaggle of Regency fops, one never knew. The far end of the bar, out of harm's way, were a group of workers in overalls that told of their immediate past history prior to their wearers relaxing by competing over a game of darts. In the lounge area to our left would be dinner-suited gents and coiffured ladies awaiting taxis to take them to the city for the evening. Birmingham in those days was the city of choice. Wolverhampton was yet to achieve the city status. Whilst in the back room, there might be a group of men, inevitably men, of West Indian origin, playing their unique variation of overarmed dominoes, and so on. But I think you get the picture. The point is, here was a microcosm of a representative, though not exhaustive, range of backgrounds. A cake slice through the ghetto of social strata, all mingling in bonhomie. The one thing that was not in any evidence whatsoever was that problem of one name I referred to earlier. Class. The class structure, that time-served feature of our lives that some would suggest has been the bedrock of our civilization almost since these islands were first populated. Institutionalized and ingrained to the extent that it is taken as the norm more so than its relevance to life in the 21st century is questioned, it is the glue that holds together the fabric of our social structure. But does it? Has the concept of class outgrown its usefulness to the extent that it may be damaging that which it seeks to protect? Embedded in the class structure still lies the notion of imperialism. A century since the foundations of the British Empire began to crumble, many of our institutions and aspects of our educational system are still geared to providing skills and leaders for an entity that no longer exists. Change has been afoot for decades. The move from grammar schools towards a comprehensive education system being a notable manifestation. But in this context, the general pace of such change has been anemic. In the meantime, the breaking down of arbitrary barriers, particularly the rise of feminism, disability empowerment and equal rights, has created a dichotomy where the established order is no longer fit for purpose. This is on a societal scale. But a poignant example of it that hits home was provided by a thinker from amongst our own ranks. Former MP and broadcaster Brian Walden, born in West Bromwich and the son of a glassmaker, had, prior to his death in May 2019, spent much of his life questioning the status quo. He told the simple but compelling tale of the factory operative, a working-class man as he describes, who studied, gained proficiency, and achieved promotion, but who could never elevate himself past a certain level as others passed him by. He wondered why, until his suspicions were confirmed one day, when the wealthy owner put his arm around his shoulder and congratulated him on a good morning's work. "Now," said the owner, "I'll go for my lunch and you can get your dinner." If true, and it certainly rings as such, this represents an appalling indictment on the pernicious effects of the sliding scale of class. It lurks silently in the shadows, largely unnoticed or ignored by disinterested onlookers passing by on the other side and upon whom it has no effect. But, by definition, afflicts in increasing degrees those who fall lower down the order. Yet, whilst piecemeal strikes from the wings may have limited impact, there are no armies of social equalisers on the horizon preparing to cordon it off. Is it any wonder that people feel increasingly disenfranchised from those tasked with sourcing a resolution in plotting a path forward? And is this not being reflected in political upheavals, not just here, but across Europe, that see a swing away from the established parties towards those offering alternatives, some of which may be attractive when clutching for straws, but which are far from healthy under scrutiny in the longer term? This is powerful stuff, and it should be of serious concern. Whereas not so long ago, this reliance on one's background would, particularly in the days of empire and a more general attitude of accepted civility, have been accepted as the inevitable, if somewhat occasionally uncomfortable, norm. Society itself has moved on, whilst those same norms have remained hidebound. The growth in diversity, with all that entails in terms of broadening our communal perspectives, the explosion in education and the expectations arising therefrom, the recognition of alternate ways of lifestyle, the rise in alternate social mores, and perhaps more significantly, the profound shift in our country's role in a greater Europe and the world, in contrast with the time not so long ago when the sun never set on those parts we actually administered, all of these are at odds with the social scaffold fundamentally out of kilter with that it is intended to support. The long-term effect of this is at very least a weakening of the edifice. I'll proffer no firmer prognosis, because it is simply too traumatic to imagine the consequences of total collapse. Yet it is not all doom and gloom, for we already have the nub of the solution in our grasp. That solution lies, as it inevitably must, in mutual respect and forbearance based on meritocracy, social mobility, interpersonal communications, anything, just anything, other than outmoded social ideals based around accidents of birth. And the result? Well, I give you Exhibit A, in the form of that once delightful pub in Wollaston. And to demonstrate how this works on a larger scale, I present the utterly compelling Exhibit B, namely, us black country folk and them there Brummies. Long may our feigned rivalry, but ultimately generous cohabitation, continue to offer the world a model of how, and in the best of humour, it can be achieved.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!